Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of A Real Point of View here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Greg Morgan. I am your host for the evening. I come to you from the critic side of Real Movie Guy. And joining me is my good friend and actually one of my groomsmen, Mr. Larry Domkowski of Must See Movies on Facebook and Internet Critic. How you doing, Larry? Hope everything's doing good on your end. Ladies and gentlemen, we're in two different cities, two different states, but that means nothing. Our connection is thus.
Yes, we enjoy the cloud, so please join us in the cloud. You'll have fun, I promise.
Indeed, indeed. Well, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the 50s, an era where things seem to be, quote-unquote, innocent. And they really weren't, but, you know, it had that feel. Some of the best music, in my opinion, came out of the 50s. We're looking at these movies, these great movies, movies full of wonderment about what life's going to be like in the present and in the future for the characters in these films. So without further ado, we're going to be talking about three really great films. First, American Graffiti. Next, Diner, and Tin Man. American Graffiti came out back in 1973, Diner 1982, and Tin Man 1987. So why are we talking about movies that were made in the past, in the 70s and 80s, depicting the 50s? What was so great about the era of the 50s that took three different decades to discuss it? So let's get Larry to kind of chime in here. So what's the deal about the 50s, bro?
Well, you know, I think that we have made the late 40s, 50s, the early 60s into this mythological world. You know, we talk about this era from different perspectives as though they were in a different place and time, but they weren't. At the same time, we are, you know, that the Corvette was invented and being put out there, that same time, we were having race riots in this country. And at the same time, we were getting over World War II and marching around saying we are fantastic. You know, well, at that time, we started to lose our manufacturing and started sending our manufacturing overseas, never to return again. So the 1950s is really a mythological world, a time that how we remember it really didn't happen that way. And when you look at movies that were made in the 50s, it's very different. They you see a very different taste. Except for a couple of films, you see a very different taste, a very different flavor. But when you see movies were made in the 70s and 80s about the 50s, you start seeing that this is really mythology. What we remember as the 1950s really didn't happen that way. And we have three films here today that show us this in a very decent way. Our first one, Greg, is American Graffiti. It came out in 1973. George Lucas, a powerful, powerful film that
that exploded onto the screen in that year of 1973. A lot was going on in 73. We had Watergate happening. We had the end of the Vietnam War was happening.
Right.
A big question about where our innocence went. And so we start going backward and started looking backward. And George Lucas takes us to the year of 1962, and it's the last week of summer vacation, and these kids have to figure out what they're going to do with the rest of their lives. And in the process, leaves us hanging, because at the end of the movie, they still don't know what they're going to be doing for the rest of their lives. And that's the secret with American Graffiti. It's just graffiti.
Yeah, it's showing the symbolism of the true essence of the film. Now, the one thing I really liked about this film was all the stars they got to be in it. At that time, not necessarily big names, but very like the movie in essence, only we know what the outcome is of some of these actors and actresses in this film, is that they start in this film, well-cast film, wonderful actors who have become household names, many of them, in our current Hollywood, and throughout the years, even since this film, have shown their weight and their longevity. Really good film, really good people in it. So was there a particular character that you liked in this film more than any other one, Larry?
You know, I liked all the characters in there. I think the one that grasped me the most is the character of Bob Falfa. That's Harrison Ford's character, the drag race guy. And believe it or not, the Cindy Williams character. But really, everything wraps really around Richard Dreyfuss and his character and his journey, and that girl in the convertible. You know,
Elusive Debbie.
Yes. And it's not that this is a romping teenage movie at one level. On the other level, it's much more than that. You see these guys trying to, you know, maintain their youth as they go forward, and at the same time, they realize if they hold on to that too much, they won't ever get to where they have to go. And some learn the lesson in this, and some don't. But in the end, it's a real good movie. The music, you and I were talking before, is phenomenal in this film. They play just about everyone who was in the top 40 throughout the 1950s and early 60s in this soundtrack. And even if you don't see the movie ever, you definitely have already heard most of these songs. They're already a part of the great American doo-wop soundbook.
Indeed. I bought this album after I saw the movie, actually. And it was a wonderful album. I played it probably until the vinyl turned into mush, as much as I really love this music. But this is the music of my stylings. I love this kind of idealistic late 40s to early 60s music. But what I thought was really good and iconically is that they included a real cool DJ in this film. They included Wolfman Jack to play the disc jockey in the film. And anyone who knows anything about Wolfman Jack, he just has that great radio voice.
Yeah. Yeah, he was very iconic in the Midwest and on the West Coast as well. And then eventually later on in the 70s, because of this film, he ended up having his
his midnight special on television, and that was just a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, indeed. So this is a great movie to see, pretty entertaining. I thought Richard Dreyfuss, just a stellar actor. And for those of people who are not necessarily familiar with Ron Howard from Happy Days, I think this is what kind of propelled that Happy Days ideology. He did such a decent job in this film. And
well,
most people
came directly from, the characters weren't the same, but the
essence of his character portrayed it as Richie Howard, or Richie, what was it? Not Howard, Richie
Cunningham.
Richie Cunningham on the TV series Happy Days. But Ron Howard is these days a very successful director and in Hollywood, wonderful films, and Richard Dreyfuss is still acting as vibrantly as he started back in those days. Real stellar cast of people in this film, and actually each of the films that we're going to be talking about today.
You know,
any other from this that you wanted to deliver, Larry?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Any other nuances from this film that you wanted to express?
Well, I think it's important to realize that this movie set up a lot of films that we are going to see in the 70s. Everything from Tommy in 75, Apocalypse Now in 79, and a lot of films. This was the first real film that came out in the 70s that said the 70s are going to be different when it comes to film, and it was. Some people can argue that, and they do it well, that the 1970s was probably the most influential decade in the history of film. That may be true, and if that is true, this film began it. This film began what we started to see on the silver screen.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, why don't we go ahead and take a look at the next movie, which is Diner, and this is a Barry Levinson directed and written film with another stellar cast of actors who have made a name for themselves and are very prevalent in the theater movies today. Now, I'll be honest with you, Larry. This particular film is more close to my heart because I can relate to it more directly because after college, this is kind of how I lived a lot of my life in a particular diner or two, actually. And you can attest to that because one of those diners, I kind of hung out with you on occasion.
That's true.
And just these friends that come together to go through their lives and hang out at this particular diner in this film just reminds me of my youth and doing very similar things, still trying to figure out what we're doing, still trying to figure out where we're going, but doing it with your friends, and it helps the blow of the reality of how becoming an adult really starts to blossom in your life, and being able to do it with friends and acquaintances really helps you get through it, and you don't see the hardship because of all the craziness that you're going through, some of the angst that you're going through. Somehow having those buddies and around to help you get through the hard times is just that. It's not necessarily a remedy, but it sure was at least a temporary fix before having to really deal with issues that are much more relevant in your life. So I really like this film, if for no other reason, because I can relate to it very directly. What about you, Larry?
Well, this film, again, is so iconic. It is a growing up film. That's what it's about. It's about growing up, especially growing up when you're in a time in your life where you should have already have grown up. And here you have a group of guys who haven't yet. grown up. And it's obvious that for these group of five guys, adolescence is just hanging on a bit too long. So there they are together, best friends for the time being, and yet they know at the end of the year they all go separate ways to schools, to jobs, and marriage. And they'll never be like this again, this close, and they know this. So they know that this adventure, this summer, that summer is going to be not just their last summer, but it's like it was going to be their only summer. That's it. This is what's going to make us. What's interesting is right around the corner, they also see responsibility staring them in the face. And how they manifest that responsibility and how they talk about it deals with one word, women. And some of them treat women in a very adolescent, goofy way, and some of the scenes in the film will speak to that quite loudly. A box of popcorn never looked so good. I'm kidding. And yet at the same time, their vision of the future and of their own dreams is entirely not realistic. And they know this, but they're doing it anyway. And they're almost, reverting back to when they're almost pre-adolescent with some of their antics because they are fighting to not grow up and to make this moment in time last forever, even though they know it can't. And so in one sense, it's a very sad movie. In the other sense,
Right. We've
all been there. We know what they're thinking. We know what they're going through. And for crying out loud, we are them. We have to grow up and go on with the rest of our lives. And when the movie's over with, that's exactly what we need to do.
Yeah, I think that was the whole point of the film. And I call it the Peter Pan syndrome. And never wanting to grow up, yet understanding that there's nothing we can do about it. It's upon us. And so we try to make the best of it. And sometimes that means acting out. Sometimes that means being a little childish about things. And, of course, they take it to a different level here in the film, but ultimately they realize what the reality is, and that's what's so hard about this film, because it is the realism that they have to face that makes this a sadder motif. But fortunately, there's a lot of lightheartedness throughout the film kind of brings an evenness and kind of puts it on a level playing throughout the essence of this film.
It's interesting you're saying that because it is. There's a lot of lighthearted moments, which really carries the film. But right underneath that, you have, for instance, the one character who is, he's already grown up. Everything is realistic. But is it? He's married already. But he's got absolutely no communication with his wife. Never talks to her. He doesn't refer to as her name. It's just wife. He doesn't think of her as a companion or a friend. It's just wife. And he absolutely has no compassion for her when she gets his record collection out of alphabetical order, which is just an idiot thing, but to him, that's everything in the world. And he never, in the film realizes, until it's too late, that his wife really has far more depth and far more to give than he ever could possibly imagine.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. I remember that moment in the house with regard to the records and him leaving, talking about the record that was playing when he met her and got together with her. He knew it by heart, knew who produced it, knew who recorded it. And for him, that moment was being romantic and so far from the truth for her. All he did was embarrass her within her own self and within her own home, where this person was taking it so far. And I guess we would call it anal retentive these days, that he thought that was being romantic. And that's sad.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. It's a good film, Greg. And again, talk about records. Talk about the soundtrack. This movie, again, has a fantastic soundtrack. And again, it fits so well with the movie. And again, too, the movie isn't about the romantic days of the post World War II 1950s where Americans were great. It's all about, oh God, it's time to grow up now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the generation that fought in the war. It's the generation that didn't have to fight in the war. And they have to grow up and get right around the corner. And we know this in 1982. We know this, that right around the corner is Vietnam.
Right.
And we go into the movie theater in 1982 realizing this. Yeah, it's actually a part of the film because this movie is written and produced and shown to us after the Vietnam War had ended.
Interesting. That's Barry Levinson for you.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've got one more movie to take a look at here, and that's Tin Men, another movie starring Richard Dreyfuss, only this time he's sharing the screen with Danny DeVito, and not in a real pleasant way, I might add. This particular film pits two aluminum salesmen against each other, guys that didn't know each other, but yet different people in their circles knew each other, and it puts these guys against each other to some really ridiculous and very hurtful circumstances where even some adultery is going on here that was prompted by this feud between these two guys. Tell us a little bit about Tin Men, Larry.
Well, you know, you had mentioned Barry Levinson. This is also a Barry Levinson movie. Matter of fact, Barry Levinson has a group of four films called the Baltimore Films, and it's Diner, Tin Men, Avalon, and Liberty Heights. This is the second movie in that sequence of films. Tin Men is about two men salesmen. It's in the 1950s, it's in the 60s, early 60s, and they are selling aluminum siding. And they go from house to house to house, competing with each other, hating each other, challenging each other, to see who's going to get what territory, who's going to get what sales. And they will do anything at all to make these sales, including telling people who have a brick house that their house would be a better house if they had aluminum siding. Of course they're going to do that because, gosh darn it, it's sales. It's not truth. It's sales. And there is a status symbol that rides with them, and that's a Cadillac. And they compete. Their competition is made manifest by who has the latest Cadillac, the greater Cadillac. And they do this year after year after year. And finally, it's done. It's over with. There is people are going to jail because of this whole stuff with the aluminum siding. This whole aluminum siding racket that was going on. And at the very end, they realize that they are more friends than enemies than always had been. And they're looking at each other, and they think, now what do we do? And as they look down the street, they see hundreds of things that start to become important in the early 60s. They see a McDonald's sign going up. They see a VW Beetle driving by. They see a Colonel Sanders happening. They start seeing all of these things which become a part of the American pop culture as soon
as we started getting into this whole concept of mass production of pop culture. So Tin Men takes us from this post-World War II attitude and this salesmen are everything to we can now mass produce pop culture. Incredible film. Barry Levinson does a great job producing this, directing this film. He also wrote it, and I got to tell you something. Out of the three films, this is not the best film. This is, as far as just watchability, this is the lowest of the three films. But as far as films that really show us something that unapologetically shows us something, shows us an American society and who we are, this film does it better than the other two.
I'd agree with you on that. I like the banter between the two. I like the fact that these guys had to go to a hearing about their sales practices with regard to aluminum siding. I thought that was really kind of funny. And the examples that they give, you get a free aluminum siding, but you have to pay for labor and you have to pay for the nails and things like that. But, you know, the siding is free and it's only going to cost you $20,000, you know, whatever the amount
mm-hmm.
of the going rate at the time. And it's just crazy stuff.
And it
was part of their creed is what they did.
And it's really that whole idea that salesman mentality is, and Barry Levinson is very specific about this, that he kind of borrows the idea from Death of a Salesman, that these salesmen are supposed to be this American, this is America at its best. You know, you are your own person, you're your own boss, you get out there, you compete, you win, you know, and yet where do they end up at the end? You know, and if you realize what they're selling, aluminum siding is a facade. So they're selling a facade to themselves. They're selling a facade to the customers. And when the facade gets ripped away and they have nothing, and they're suddenly see everything that they've missed trying to become this fictitious thing called the American salesman.
Yeah, this was an interesting film, and again, Richard Dreyfuss. I've seen very many films where Richard Dreyfuss was asleep at the wheel. He does a good job in this film and helps support this film, both he and Danny DeVito in this one.
Danny DeVito actually does.
Right.
He does a really good job in this film, and Richard Dreyfuss and Barbara Hershey, she plays such an important role in this movie. Yeah. And John Mahoney, you know, the guy from Frasier, Frasier's dad, he's in this film, does a great job. Bruno Kirby, a lot of people know who he is, fantastic person, fantastic actor, he's in it. Again, it's got a great cast.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, sadly again, we've come short of time. We'd love to talk more, and maybe in the future we'll be able to do that. Thanks again for listening. Thanks again, Larry, for your always informative self regarding these films. Take a look at our website at realpointofview.com, our Facebook, Real Point of View on Facebook. Check us out on Twitter at Real Movie Guy. Check out Must See Movies on Facebook. We appreciate you guys listening, and we invite you back to our next show. And thanks again for making movies important in your life. And it is about movies. Thanks again, Larry.
Hey, have a great evening.
You do the same, my friend. Take care, everybody.